Welcome to the Canopy Now podcast. We are the best and easiest way to stay connected to what's happening in your hometown. I'm your host, Tyler Franke. We have a great show lined up for you today. We'll be talking with Linda Scher, a family mediator and member of Better Angels, the Citizens Political Dialogue and Unification Movement. She'll tell us how to survive this election season without going insane or ruining our next company potluck. Later, Tyler and I will share some cool news about the show and discuss ballot measure 103, the grocery tax ban. And we'll wrap up our look at the history of the Canby Public Library, which includes a time the library grappled with the difficult question of censorship. But first, the news. JV Northwest, a Canby-based manufacturer of tanks and systems for beer, wine, cider, and other industries, has a new name, ICC Northwest. The change comes after it was announced that operations at the company's 50,000 square foot state-of-the-art manufacturing facility in Canby would be assumed by ICC Group, an engineering and design firm based in St. Louis, Missouri. JV Northwest was founded in 1981. The company manufactures custom stainless steel tanks for the food processing, beverage, pharmaceutical, pure water, and chemical industries, some as much as 50 feet tall. Terms of the deal were not disclosed, but it was indicated that the Canby plant would now operate as one of ICC's five regional offices. ICC said in a press release that all of JV Northwest staff would be retained, saying, quote, "they are the backbone of our industry," and that they would hire more. ICC's entrance allows JV Northwest's legacy to live on to accomplish an even bigger vision, explore cutting-edge technologies, and offer full engineering packages that will directly benefit clients, their business pursuits, and their bottom line, the press release said. The move further strengthens ICC's standing in the craft brew industry. Last year, they were contracted by the Craft Brew Alliance, which is based in Portland, to design and build a new $23 million Kona brewery in Hawaii. The project is currently under construction. Canby Fire District and other agencies responded to a half-acre grass fire that was threatening a house on Bremer Road Friday afternoon. Crews from Canby, Aurora, Clackamas County, and Tualatin Valley Fire and Rescue were able to control the blaze before it damaged the home or outbuildings. Canby Fire determined the cause was an unattended burn pile. The district advises that a backyard burning ban is still in effect. Although we've had some rain recently, conditions are still very dry. Be careful out there, and please contact your local fire district for updated conditions and current regulations before you burn. The Canby City Council will meet this Wednesday. Their agenda includes a request from CNS Acres to annex 9.6 acres of undeveloped land on North Pine Street in the northeast area of the city. If approved, the currently existing farm and forest land would be rezoned for low-density residential development, R1. The Planning Commission previously lent their support to the proposal. One resident, Gene Robison, spoke in opposition at the hearing last month, saying it should be held off until safety and drivability concerns are addressed on North Pine Street.
Pine Street's a mess. The county won't do anything. We put concrete in the holes ourselves to plug up holes right in front of the driveway. And the city won't do anything until the county brings it up, and then the city will take it over. And we don't need any more cars on Pine Street. There's children catching school buses. There's cars zooming by. It's hard to get in and out of the driveway sometimes.
In other business, the city will look at trimming its fees for street trees, say that five times fast, for new development. The council had just raised the fees for planting and maintenance of new street trees from $200 to $500 in July. They now feel that fee is too high and are looking to bring it back down to $250, as well as reducing the years of required maintenance by the city from 3 years to one. For a complete agenda for Wednesday night's meeting, visit our website at canbynowpod.com. Police beat for the week of September 18th through the 24th. On September 19th at 8:25 a.m., police responded to a home on Northwest 1st Avenue to a man who had reported receiving a new iPhone that he hadn't ordered. He said the new phone had been charged to his Verizon account without his knowledge or approval. I think that may qualify as felony theft. iPhones aren't cheap. Later that day at 8:24 p.m., police received a report of a pet cat being shot. The cat later had to be put down because of its injuries. At 11:37 p.m., officers stopped a vehicle on Northeast Territorial Road after recognizing the driver as a man who had an outstanding warrant for his arrest. Officers notified the driver of the arrest warrant and took physical control of him after the suspect resisted. Items seized from the suspect's vehicle included property connected to a residential burglary, financial documents that had been reported stolen, and a substance that later tested positive for heroin. On September 20th at 9:09 p.m., an officer detained two individuals on Southeast 1st Avenue who admitted traveling to Canby for the purpose of stealing items from a local store. Both individuals were later cited and released. On September 21st at 9 p.m., officers stopped a vehicle with a burned-out headlamp on Northeast 37th Avenue. During the stop, officers determined the driver and passenger were both unlicensed and under the age of 16. Officers also located a nicotine inhalant system in their possession. A parent was called to the scene to retrieve both juveniles and their vehicle. On September 23rd at 11:41 p.m., officers received witness reports about suspicious activities associated with an unoccupied vehicle on Highway 99E. As officers approached, they noticed several individuals leave a laundromat and enter two separate vehicles. Officers subsequently conducted traffic stops on both vehicles and made contact with the occupants. One of the passengers was taken into custody on an outstanding Clackamas County arrest warrant, and two other individuals were arrested for possession of controlled substances. Although one of the passengers initially gave a fake name, his identity was later confirmed after officers found recent jail release paperwork in the vehicle. Other items seized were hypodermic needles, suspected heroin, and methamphetamine. One vehicle with an expired registration sticker on a switched license plate was towed from the stop location. In sports, it was homecoming week for Canby Cougars football. Canby High School kicked off Friday night with Cougar Fest, featuring food, games, live music, and other fun. The Cougs faced a challenge, hosting the Lake Oswego Lakers, who scored for the first time on the very first play of the game. The Cougars fought hard, as always, but ultimately fell 33-12. Sophomore Tyler Meade had 3 catches for 105 yards and a touchdown, while junior Ronan Gay had 7 catches, including 1 for a touchdown, and 5 tackles on defense. Next up will be their final league game of the season as they take on Oregon City at Pioneer Stadium. In boys soccer, the Cougars got their first league win Thursday as they beat visiting Lake Oswego at home 3-0. Junior Ian Quinlan scored 2 and sophomore Francisco Cabello added 1 in the upset. They'll next take on Oregon City at home. Game starts at 7 p.m., then hit the road to face Tigard on Thursday. Rough week for girls soccer as they lost 4 of their last 5 after starting 6-0. They fell at Tualatin and at Lake Oswego, each by a score of 4-0. They'll stay on the road Tuesday as they take on Oregon City and finally return home against Tigard on Thursday, kickoff at 7 p.m. In volleyball, the Cougs finally saw their 6-game winning streak come to an end this weekend as they fell in the Westland Tournament to St. Mary's Academy, 2-1. The loss leaves them at 6-6 in league play and 9-9 overall. They're currently in 4th place in the Three Rivers League as the playoff picture begins to come into focus. They'll take on Westland at home Tuesday. Game starts at 6:30, then wrap up their regular season Thursday at Tualatin. All right, my guest today is Linda Scher. She's a family mediator and facilitator based in Portland, but she's also involved with a nationwide organization called Better Angels, which is just getting started here in Oregon. Their goal is to reduce political polarization in the United States and teach practical skills for communicating across political differences. Linda, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much.
How are you?
I'm great. Good. How are you, Frankie?
Good. I'm good. Thanks so much for being on. So, Linda, can you start by telling us briefly what mediation is, the form of mediation that you're involved with, and do you get a lot of calls from people looking for meditation or medication?
I don't get those calls so much anymore. I've been doing this for 25 years, and 25 years ago, there was a lot of confusion.
Yeah. You're a little more established now.
Yeah. But we are right after medication in the Yellow Pages, so...
just if people are having trouble finding you.
Right. So mediation is a neutral, facilitated conversation between people with an aim towards meeting some sort of goal. Usually people need to resolve a conflict and have some sort of outcome that works for everybody. Mm-hmm. In my case, it's usually two people that I'm mediating, usually a couple who are separating or divorcing, But sometimes it's adult siblings that are having an issue,
okay,
or a parent and a team, different kinds of family issues. Mm-hmm. And so my job is to help them have that conversation, help them decide what to do.
Cool.
And support good communication in, yeah, in the process.
Yeah, sounds like tough work at times.
Yeah, it's challenging, and it's also extremely rewarding.
I bet. Cool. So, Linda, I don't know if you've heard about this. I'm kind of more plugged in with news at times because of what I do through the podcast, but there's actually an election coming up here in November. Had you heard about that at all?
I've heard something about
I think there's been a couple things in the news about it. But anyway, the reason that we wanted to have you on is because there's a lot of research and pundits that are talking about just the current state of things, and particularly these upcoming midterms, and just that they're looking particularly nasty, very, very divisive, very polarized issues before a lot of people, and races going on. And just the impact and the stress that that is having on people is of a concern to a lot of folks. And Better Angels, which you're involved with, was basically created as a direct response to what we're seeing now. Can you talk a little bit more about that and why this organization exists?
So Better Angels is, the name of it is based on the quote from Abraham Lincoln in his inaugural address.
His first one.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, and where he is talking about, you know, all the hurt from the Civil War and how we need to heal and to appeal to our better angels in order to do that. And that's the inspiration for that name of the organization. And it came from the distress of people and from all sides of feeling like we're further and further apart, we're having trouble talking to each other. Families are breaking apart because of this.
It's causing workplace issues. People are like unfriending people on Facebook, which is so sad to see.
Right, yeah. Right. And what isn't happening as a result is the conversations aren't happening, mm-hmm, because people are afraid to even broach topics of importance to them.
Sure.
Because it triggers a lot of defensiveness and polarization.
Yeah.
So the idea of Better Angels is to give people a model. There's two different arms of this. One is they call it red blue workshops, and it's an oversimplification to say red or blue, mm-hmm, but it's really just sort of grouping people in the general category of conservative, Republican, liberal, Democrat.
I always consider myself a yellow. I don't know if that's
we don't have a workshop for that.
Okay, well maybe later on.
But so that workshop does intentionally evenly divide the group, having equal numbers of people who identify as red generally or blue, mm-hmm, and has a structured, there's a 4-hour version, there's an all-day version, and there's a multiple-day version, but the most popular is the single day, mm-hmm, and I think it's the most effective. It's doable
for
people.
And are these just individuals that are gathered randomly, or is it
from
within
the local community?
Okay,
yeah.
So
yeah,
it's not necessarily targeting, like, you know, workplace or people that are already grouped together.
No, many times they don't know each other at all within the group. And they're people who have heard about Better Angels, have contacted them in some way because there's a podcast that people hear about it.
And they're just looking for ways to do better at these conversations.
Yeah, they're feeling equally pained or frustrated or unhappy with how they can't have these conversations.
Yeah.
And so there's two moderators who are neutral, and that's, mm-hmm, how it appealed to me, since that's a role that I play in mediation, as being a neutral.
Yeah.
And they're trained, they're screened, etc. There's a very structured format for the day.
Okay.
And it's intentionally about blues talking to blues and reds talking to reds, and then sharing as a group and being heard and listened to, and not about sitting people down in a room and just saying, tell the other person why you're right, and why they're wrong.
Right. When does the gladiator fights come in? Is that the second part? Or
that would be a different organization entirely.
Gotcha. You know, okay,
that might be
guys.
The Purple Knights or something.
I'll have to interview them next.
So it's very structured, and it's in the idea is to learn something about where the other person is coming from.
That's cool, though. So they're just able to listen to the two people from the same side talk about where they're coming from.
Exactly, and,
gain
mostly
some understanding that way, hopefully.
Yeah, so it goes through various steps, and at the very end of the full-day workshop, there is an opportunity to ask questions, again, in a pretty structured way, so mm-hmm. that it's they're not questions that are, you know, why are you so stupid, or yeah. you know, don't you realize that your position results in this terrible outcome?
Right.
but it really is, you know, it's what most people look forward to in coming to this workshop is I want to be able to ask some questions and right. get some understanding and understand how do you come to arrive at this position?
Yeah. yeah.
So that's what that Red Blue workshop focuses on.
It must be nice to have that opportunity to ask those questions and know it's not going to, you know, result in a fight or, you know.
Right. There's a lot of support there. There's yeah. people there to back you up and to help that conversation happen.
Yeah, cool.
And what has happened organically out of those Red Blue workshops is people have formed what they call Red Blue alliances. So mm-hmm. after they've gone through the workshop, they might be, I want to keep having this conversation. And so they get together once a month in a coffee shop and they talk with each other, people yeah. that they've met, and then bring their friends.
That's
and they
cool.
kind of build on that, the skills that they've learned. And
that's awesome.
Yeah. And so Better Angel supports that if they want support. So
yeah.
they'll help them with some skills or some exercises or, you know, whatever.
Continuing that conversation. That's
yeah.
awesome. So how soon can we get you guys like just directly into Capitol Hill?
Well, we're hoping.
I think this is needed there very badly right now.
Yeah, I agree. It would be lovely to have conversations based on you know, core principles and values, and mm-hmm. and rather than you know, alignments and polarizations.
Yeah,
so,
yeah, for sure.
So,
it does feel like that polarization is, you know, yeah. so real there. Yeah,
yeah.
That they don't really talk to each other. Definitely don't listen to each other. But
yeah. yeah. So the hope is it's more of a ground up. Movement that the more people learn about this, the more skills they pass on to others, the better the conversations get, and then maybe communities can actually have, you know, like civil town hall meetings, you know,
yeah.
that would be a lovely result. The
Very
other
cool.
part of it is a skill buildings workshop. There's a separate workshop that's
mm-hmm.
that the Better Angels puts on that strictly doesn't matter who comes, anybody can come from any background. It's just a personal skill building workshop when you want to have a conversation with somebody you have a relationship with. So that's more for coworkers, friends, family members. It's to help you have that first attempt at having a conversation with your, you know, your aunt who, you know, doesn't come to Thanksgiving anymore because she's tired of hearing people ask her, you know, how could she possibly have that position?
For sure. Yeah. yeah.
And that's I think normally a half a day workshop.
Yeah.
I haven't participate in that yet.
Cool. Well, that sounds like that would be really valuable too. So what, for folks who, you know, because we're just getting started in Oregon, some of these workshops may not be available or may not be available close to us yet, especially down in Canby. Are there a few sort of practical skills that we could talk about as far as basically surviving this upcoming political season? How do I not literally go insane, throw a trash can at someone? And basically what I'm asking is, If I find myself in a political debate with someone, how can I make them shut up and just admit that I'm right?
Again, I don't have the skills for that.
Okay, that's someone else again. Okay,
that was someone else. But
as far as just surviving and,
yeah.
in our little circles,
so,
whether it's family or
yeah.
workplace, what would you
right.
suggest?
So first of all, one of the most important things is have these conversations, these difficult conversations, in person.
Okay.
Email.
Get off Facebook.
Facebook, yeah.
Immediately.
They just, if, for an important conversation, you need to look in someone's eyes. You need to understand their tone. You need to connect with them
mm-hmm.
with body language. So that's one thing. Another thing is ask questions that promote understanding,
mm-hmm.
Not to support your position. So don't ask a question that you think is going to change the person's mind by the way you ask it.
Gotcha.
You know, and so...
Should you even try to change a person's mind? Or would you say the goal is really just more about understanding?
I think that the primary goal is about understanding.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have...
Because I feel like that's often not the case. We're often trying to convince, here's why you're wrong, here's why I'm
absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And often, I
think... And they're trying to do the same thing.
Right.
And that's why,
right.
yeah.
And often I think it's that if they just understood... what the actual effect is of what they want,
yeah.
then they wouldn't feel that way.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of, it puts people off because it's feel like, well, you must not think I know anything.
Mm-hmm.
And,
mm-hmm.
It also, you know, begs the question of why am I even talking to you if all your point is
right.
to get me to have your side.
Sure.
So sometimes though, deeper understanding helps people get the nuances, which is really how polarization, it strips away all the nuances.
Yeah,
and you can find yourself supporting something that really there's part of it you don't agree with, but because you feel like you have to take one side or the other, you take all the bad stuff with the good. And really effective community change can happen with some changes of what both people agree is not working,
sure,
or is unhelpful. So that's one thing, is to ask a question. And so not just ask the question, but then when the person responds, don't be waiting for them to stop talking so you can say what you want to say.
Yeah, yeah.
Take a second to first reframe what that person said so that you make sure you get it right. And wait for them.
Active listening. My wife keeps trying to get me to do that.
I don't want to use a buzzword because it's not like you have to have gone through, you know, a year of training to do that.
Right, right.
It's really just a matter of saying, you know, what I heard you say
is... It's just a good habit of making sure that you really understood.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's not just saying it back, but then waiting for that person to confirm that you've gotten it, because you might have missed a piece of what they've said.
Yeah.
And when you're talking, realize that if you start getting on a roll and you just keep going and going and going, the other person doesn't have the ability to track all the different things you've just covered.
Yeah.
You're just going off on your thing. You take a break, let them have that moment to say, I think I've heard you say this.
Cool.
Before you go on.
Yeah.
So give that back and forth an opportunity to happen.
So what I feel like you're saying...
Mm-hmm. Good.
It's what I really think is helpful is what you said first, that reframing, that we're here to understand, that makes it a lot easier to take that moment and listen and restate, because if I'm really trying to understand, then I am going to be focused on making sure that I understood what you just said and repeat that rather than just waiting to say, because if my goal is to convince you, then I'm just waiting to talk. I'm waiting for you to stop so I can get my thing in. So
Yeah, and very little change happens from repeating positions over and over.
We just kind of get more entrenched in our own views. So, okay, cool. Well, we're almost out of time here. I just wanted to close with coming back to the name, which I think is so cool, the Better Angels, which I did know that it came from Lincoln's first inaugural. And I think that's a really good reminder right now, because when he was giving that speech, the nation is literally on the brink of war, the bloodiest war that we've ever seen. Mm-hmm. Still more casualties than World War One and Two for us, for mm-hmm. the U.S. for World War One and Two, Korea and Vietnam combined. I mean, this was a mm-hmm. horrible war that we're on the brink of. And I know that for a lot of people, the climate feels really hard and really bad right now, and it is. But as a nation, we've been in a lot worse places, right? And we made it through, and I think we'll make it through this.
Well, I believe that too. Otherwise, I wouldn't be working hard to
to
find
any final thoughts.
Have that conversation with the person that you're afraid to have that conversation with.
Yeah.
And that's my own vow myself, because that's one of the reasons that I decided to get involved in Better Angels, is so that I have people in my life that I've had a hard time talking to, and I want to be able to, you know, maintain the relationship and understand them better. Mm. And that's what it's all about. And
that's
give
great.
It a try.
That's great. Well, thank you so much, Linda, for being on the program.
Thank you.
This has been really fun. Really appreciate it. So you guys can learn more about Better Angels at better-angels.org. And you can actually become a member of the organization and get involved with what they do for a donation of only $10. Is that right?
Yes. And also if at that site, if you're interested in having a group come to Canby, that's where you can request that, and you can say, express your interest.
Yeah, I think we could, a few of us down there could use that, so that'd be cool. So right now we're going to take a quick break, and then we'll be back with Canby then. Stay tuned.
Independent, civic-minded, and the descendant of Canby's pioneering Lee family, Ora Lee Catley served as librarian of the Canby Public Library for 15 years, as the library outgrew its original space at City Hall and began a nomadic existence, moving to a number of different downtown locations over the decades. In 1959, Ora and her husband, George, suffered a devastating loss, as their only son, Hal, was killed in a horrific train crash on February 9th, along with three others. They were part of a carpool group who all lived in Cambie and worked in various locations in Portland. Their car, a 1955 Ford Coupe, was struck at the crossing near the fairgrounds, which at that time did not have signal lights, only a warning sign. The car was dragged 250 feet from its impact point and was so mangled that it had to be pulled apart to recover Hal's body. Hal Catley was 41 and left behind a wife, Ruth, and three children. Also killed were 28-year-old Lonnie German, a pregnant mother of three, 20-year-old Irene Koch, who had been newly engaged, and 62-year-old Leonard Arthur Nixon, married with two grown children. 7 years later, Ora herself passed following a short illness. She was 76 and died in the same house she was born in on her grandparents' original land claim. She had lived in Cambie almost her entire life. Another long-serving librarian was Beth Saul, who worked for the city in a number of roles from 1982 to 2008. In 1985, the library was preparing for yet another move, from the basement of 181 North Grant Street to the Masonic Building at 288 Northwest 1st Avenue, when Beth had a novel idea. Rather than boxing up and moving the library's collection of some 16,000 books, she called on patrons to simply check all the books out and return them a few weeks later to the library's new location. It worked, but not quite as well as she'd hoped. As moving day approached, the library's collection had dwindled to around 8,000, still a hefty number. So Beth hatched a new scheme. She planned to use a, quote, human chain made up of 200 local elementary school students to pass the books from one location to the other. Alas, uncooperative weather put an end to this book brigade before it even began. Nevertheless, an army of volunteers showed up and, with Beth organizing their efforts, managed to shift all 8,000 books in about 30 minutes. In 1977, the Library Information Network of Clackamas County was established, when voters approved a countywide levy to fund library operations. It formed a consortium of libraries that includes Cambie, Molalla, and Oregon City, which share revenue, resources, and a unified computer system. The marriage, however, has not always been harmonious. The consortium's revenue sharing formula, which is calculated from the circulation numbers of each of the member libraries rather than being based on need, has created what the Oregonian once described as a system of haves and have-nots. In this same article, the Lake Oswego Public Library, one of the busiest in the state, was likened to a family's rich uncle, while the libraries in Cambie and Oregon City were called its blue-collar kin. The library ended its nomadic lifestyle in 1989, when Cambie voters approved a $600,000 bond measure that allowed the city to purchase and renovate the former Ace Hardware store in downtown Cambie. The library's collection by then had swelled to more than 20,000 pieces, but their new digs had room to grow with space for double that amount. In 2001, library patron Felicia Sheeran checked out a video that contained an animated version of the poem "'Twas the Night Before Christmas," along with several other holiday cartoons from the 1950s. She also checked out a book containing the same classic Yuletide poem. Both media contained depictions of Santa smoking a pipe and drinking a cup of holiday cheer. Sheeran returned the book and movie with notes, saying the materials were inappropriate for her 6-year-old daughter and 3-year-old son, and demanding that they be removed from the library. On December 17th, just in time for Christmas, the library board issued its ruling. The materials would not be removed from the children's section. Policy held that censorship is a purely individual matter, and that the library does not act in place of parents with regard to materials that children select. Beth Saul sent a letter to Sheeran notifying her of the board's decision and thanking her for her interest and involvement. In 2004, questions arose over the lack of internet filters on the library's computers, particularly as they pertained to use by minors. In response, Beth wrote a letter to the editor of the Oregonian, explaining that the library's strict policy mandates that any minor's use of computers is approved by their parent or guardian. So, although the internet station at the Cambie Public Library are not filtered, she wrote, the library procedures actually require the best filter of all, parental consent. In 2016, the Cambie Public Library happily shed some of its blue-collar roots, moving into a brand new 6.9 million 21st century library facility and civic building on Northeast 2nd Avenue. All right, welcome to the Cambie Now Soapbox. Got our producer Tyler Clausen on for this.
Hello.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good.
So we're going to be talking about Measure 103 today in the upcoming election. But first of all, a little bit of news here, Tyler. I don't know if you saw, but we have hit 500 downloads
I
for the show.
That. I watch our stats pretty religiously. I do too. Like, throughout the day,
I'm a little obsessed.
Oh, I'm going to the bathroom. Let's just check the stats real quick. Yeah. Oh, my boss is yelling at me. Let me just check my stats real quick.
It's gone up by one.
Yeah, and every single time, I'm like, 46 to 47. So if you're listening, just know I see you listening.
We do. We watch you very closely, and we are very, very appreciative. We laugh, but honestly, I check the number a lot because I can't believe it. I can't believe that we have hit 500 in less than 3 weeks. That's really more than we thought, and we are so grateful for your support and just for listening. So thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much.
Tyler, you went to the Canby Film Fest last week.
I did. Yeah.
How was it?
It was really, really cool. It was really fun to see those. And me being the nerdy writer that I am, I'm like, oh, well, now I have to do
now
this with my life.
It.
So, yeah, I was really excited. I got to meet a couple of the directors. I got to meet John, who you interviewed. And I was really excited. He actually gave us a small shout out at the film festival.
Yeah, he's a cool guy. Thanks for that, John.
Yeah, seriously. I was really appreciative of that.
Should we say this is John Drott we're talking about? There are a lot of people named John.
There's a lot of Johns out there. Susie's and Johns. I know. Thank you, all of you. But yeah, it was really fun.
Cool.
It was a really good
deal.
Do
you have any films that really stood out to you?
Yeah, the film where the girl was turned into a mermaid.
I was going to ask you about that. So that one seemed to me like it was one of those independent films that would have like way more profanity than you would have thought.
It definitely had, if I remember correctly, it did have some profanity, but
it struck me like that.
It was I liked it for the way that they took something, you know, childish and mythical and turned it into very real and almost a scary feel to it. At one point, like, you're laughing at this character while she's crying, and you're like, why am I laughing? She's going through something. This character, like, this scenario is absurd and ridiculous and fun.
Right.
But then when you start to uncover the layers of, like,
human/mermaid pain going on there.
It was really good. So that's a movie that can make me laugh and then question why I'm laughing. It's very good.
That film was, what was it called?
Delilah's Story?
Delilah. That's right. Delilah, or subtitle, or Damn It, I Got My Wish.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it was a very good movie. All of them were really good. I'm not taking away anything from the other ones.
Sure.
They were great, great, great stuff. So that was just the one that I liked the most, I think.
So today we're talking about Oregon Measure 103, which I feel like a lot of people are talking about. It's kind of one of the big ones. You may have seen the magnets at Fred Meyer.
Nope.
Well, I'm talking to the listeners. I'm not talking to you.
Got it.
You listeners may have seen them. I've seen them. This is the proposal to ban ban sales tax on groceries. So that's what it is. It's pretty simple. It would make it so you can't put a sales tax on groceries. Tyler, how do you feel about taxes?
I don't like them. I don't like taxes.
How do you feel about sales tax on your groceries?
I don't like filing taxes. I don't like the word tax. It's too weird.
So you must love Measure 103.
I mean, honestly,
you're a big fan.
I don't know. I don't know. I mean, I don't. I get the idea of it, right, to not tax our groceries and not have sales tax is what it seems like they're pushing for, or the way that they're making the argument.
It would,
like,
put it into
you live in Oregon, not Washington. Why would you pay sales tax?
Right. And it would put it into the state's constitution.
Right. Never going to happen.
Never, ever will you be taxed on your groceries for sales tax.
So I guess that – but yeah, and so that's the other argument is, like, we don't have a tax. Why are we doing this right now? So, I mean, it's interesting to see people being like, you know, we should make an amendment that no aliens are ever allowed to come to Oregon. It's
right.
Like, outer space aliens.
Oh,
I should clear that up.
Oh, yeah. Should we take that out?
No, that's fine. I made a funny joke.
Extraterrestrials, let's just be clear.
Yeah, extraterrestrials are never allowed to come to Oregon or something.
Gosh.
But obviously, like, you can't make that law because it's not a thing right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, so. Aliens aren't knocking on our doors. So, yeah, that's the thing that that I'm kind of against it because it's that there's no one's proposing a grocery tax.
Right.
It was created to solve a problem that does not exist.
Yeah.
And I really feel like what's really behind it is, and this is just my opinion. We didn't do our whole thing about the soapbox being just our opinion, whatever, we're not reporting stuff. But I feel like this comes out of Measure 97 back in 2016, which was the most expensive ballot initiative in fight in state history. It's like over $40 million was spent on that one measure on both sides, between the two sides. But it was basically a corporate tax. And some of the big companies at the heart of that were some of the ones, same ones here, as far as Kroger, Costco, some of the big grocers.
Yeah.
That was for all big corporations, not just groceries, but they were some of the big ones in 97. So I feel like this is kind of the response to that. This is a sequel to that fight where they're just kind of saying, like, well, we're never even going to let you get to that point ever again.
Right.
Because one of the big selling points and how they were able to get that turned down, that was successful in turning down Measure 97, was that this is basically a sales tax on groceries. They're going to tax us more, and we're going to have to pass that on to you. So you're going to end up spending however much more we get taxed, you're going to see that on your groceries. So now they're basically coming at it the other way and just stopping that from ever happening. So.
And see, I guess I've watched too many movies and read too many books, because part of me, like, I immediately get really suspicious, and I'm like, all right, what small town farmer is in control of this amendment, and he's trying to play the field like House of Cards style so that he can never have to pay taxes again. But then the other part of me is like, no, this is, I mean, yeah, the people who it's going to affect, they definitely don't want to pay those extra taxes. And
they don't.
And then I don't want the I'm a lower income type of person, and I don't want to be taxed on top of what I'm already being taxed.
Well,
and
so it's basically,
I feel like it could end up feeling like that where I go get milk and it's $2 more. Obviously, that's a hyperbolic, but but it's $2 more because they have to pay $2 more or whatever. So then I'm being taxed,
and I'm
paying more out the pocket.
For sure. It's a tax thing, and it's really I think, you know, I'm simplifying it to kind of the corporate element that I see in this, but the people are in favor of this not because of that, not because they're just corporate slaves.
Right.
You know, they don't want to pay taxes. And I think that there's also a big element of small government, you know? They don't. So what this also affects is the idea, like some cities in Oregon have kind of kicked around the idea of a soda tax.
And a
tax on candy has been discussed, you know, putting taxes on some of those things. And this would basically preempt that, make that not happen. And some people are against that just on general principle that the government shouldn't be able to use taxes to control people's lives or tell them what they should and shouldn't eat.
Right.
You know? So I think that's another reason that people are against something like
real
this.
Real crazy from there.
Or in support of something.
Where does it end? Where, you know, first we start taxing the soda pop and the candy. Yeah. Where does it end from there, you know?
Yeah.
And so I totally get that they don't want that. But, you know, I have a view that if you're going to do something right, you shouldn't have the government telling you to do the right thing.
Yeah.
You as a person should do the right thing. So that's
for sure.
Not eating soda.
Because you're basically an anarchist right now.
Right, I am. And essentially, like, that's the sort of thing you want to shout out into the world, right?
Yeah. I was just joking, but you made it serious.
No, but if it comes down to it, I think that there is a lot of that for me is like, you as a person are in control of what you do.
For sure.
You shouldn't make the government. And so I guess fundamentally I'd be against them taxing anything.
So that means you're in support of Measure 103, which would make it so they can't do that. It's one of those confusing yes-no ones.
And they do that. We've talked about that. Yeah. So
voting yes means no taxes.
Right.
Voting no means, it doesn't mean that a tax is happening, but it's possible.
They're not going to immediately tax me.
Right. It doesn't vote in a tax, but it does leave that door open.
And that's good information for people to know, too, because you can very easily get swept up into the campaign of it, and people will make it sound
they see grocery tax, and they automatically go no.
Right.
Right? So, if you don't want grocery taxes, you want to vote yes on this. I'm against it. Sounds like you're for it.
Yeah.
I feel like I am able to just be free and be against it because I think there's a 0% chance that this fails. Like, people are not.
You'd like to be on the losing side.
No, I feel free to say whatever I want because I know this is going to pass. Like, this is not, what I'm saying is not going to affect anyone. People are not going to vote for, you know, people are going to say, I'll ban taxes for sure.
Yeah.
So, it was brilliant, I think. Whoever came up with this, deserves all the money because it was a good idea.
Because they did it the right way.
Yeah. For sure. Well, I think they did it. They did it the smart way.
Right. Oh,
for sure.
Not the right way.
The right way for them.
So, this is our first official disagreement. Obviously, we're not at each other's throats, and we're not going to
Yeah, this
ban
is,
each other from
well,
Thanksgiving.
I don't know. Do we need to call Linda in, our mediator from earlier? Maybe she needs to come and sit in the third chair
tip
here.
She's given me through
we put through in. Conversation. Yeah. Thank you, Linda. Shout
thank
out to
so
Linda Scher.
But yeah, so you know, we definitely want to hear from you guys on that. I still didn't hear anything from anyone on why I should be against the theme park measure. So obviously, Camby's getting that theme park.
I forgot to mention, Yes on 102 contacted me.
Oh, really?
Did they? So okay. they said, well, they said something like, but first of all, they said I should not use Ballotpedia for my financial information.
Didn't you give that like a glowing review?
I did. They're not bad. They just are a little behind the times for finances. Okay. Go to the Secretary of State's website. So that's actually what I'm using for finances now. But they said we don't have $3 million. If you know someone that has $3 million, we'll take it.
Yeah.
But yeah, they don't have that much money. But they did say that let me find it here. You know, but thanks for having a thoughtful discussion on your podcast. It's important to inform voters. So that was nice. Thank you, Yes on 102. That was yes for affordable housing. Which
did
is
they say that it's specifically against theme parks, though?
They didn't say anything about the theme parks.
That's right.
They just said that they don't have $3 million.
Splashdown, coming to Camby.
Cool. All right, well, that's all we have for this episode of Soapbox. We're just going to take a quick break. And that's our show. I'm your host, Tyler Franke. Our producer is Tyler Clausen. Special thanks to our guest today, Linda Scher. Hey, if you liked what you just heard, please let us know. Write a review for us on Facebook, iTunes, or your favorite podcast app, and don't forget to subscribe so you never miss our latest episodes. Be sure to catch Thursday's show. We'll be talking with Mary Hanlon of Hanlon Development, who's behind the new Dahlia Building and the surrounding Civic Block development. She'll tell us why Cambyites should be excited about having ice cream in our jail and beer in our police station. If you have a news tip, an idea for a guest we should invite on the program, or suggestions for how we can improve, please connect with us on Facebook and Twitter @CanBeNow or on our website, canbenowpod.com. Thanks for listening.